You're listening to Midlife SideQuest, the over-the-hill gaming podcast. Here's your host, John Wall.
It's December 18th, 2025, and welcome to episode 162 of Midlife SideQuest, the over-the-hill video game podcast. I am your host, John Wall, and every Thursday morning I bring you 15 minutes of video game impressions, the latest industry news, and tales of a Gen X geek. Thank you for tuning into today's program. On this week's show, I'm going to be talking about Ghost of Yotei. But we start the show by checking out some of the headlines from this past week. And this week's story is coming from Rebecca Valentine at IGN, who reported on the November gaming sales numbers from Circana's Matt Piscatella. And the video game industry has just had a very bad month. Total spending across all categories was down 4% year over year, and hardware sales in particular were absolutely abysmal. Hardware dollar sales, so the amount of money spent on game consoles, just had the lowest month since 1995. The lowest November, I should say, since 1995. And nobody was immune from the bad news. Xbox hardware was down a whopping 70% year over year. That's not a massive surprise, though, really, when you consider the recent trajectory of their hardware numbers and the fact that they've recently raised the prices on their consoles by a decent margin and raised prices on Game Pass. So, you know, their numbers are, you know, pulling a Thelma and Louise, and I expect that to probably continue. I think more surprising to me was that the PlayStation 5 was down 40% as well, which is no small number, and sales of Switch consoles was down 10%, which is a smaller number. It doesn't sound as bad, but when you consider that the Switch 2 launched this year, so you're comparing this year with Switch 1 and 2 sales to last year, which was just Switch 1 in its, you know, what, seventh year, and it was still down 10%. That's pretty bad. So why is this happening? What is going on? Well, as I said, all three console makers have had to adjust their prices due to tariffs and skyrocketing prices on their components. Xbox and PlayStation have both raised their prices, and Switch 2, Nintendo has said that they adjusted for those things prior to launch. In November of 2019, the average price paid for a gaming console was $235. And in 2025, that price was $439. So we're talking about a $200, almost double what people were spending on for consoles in just, what, 6 years. So the fact of the matter is that gaming is becoming an increasingly expensive hobby, and the U.S. economy is not in a great place. People have less and less money to spend on luxuries like that because everything is more expensive. And I think the industry is in for a rude awakening when new consoles launch in, likely a year or two. Generative AI is pushing the price of RAM to such levels that there's speculation that, the PS6 and the new Xbox could launch in the $800 to $1,000 range. And when people are able to play almost all the games that they want on their PC already or their current gen hardware, you know, more and more, especially younger gamers, are playing games that, you know, they're not looking for the most amazing cutting edge graphical thing that is only possible on the newest machine. They just don't care about that anymore, you know. So why would you spend that kind of money on brand new hardware? I think the diehard buyers will still be there day one, but it's going to be very hard to push through to the mass market with prices like that. It's been a rough couple of years for the games industry, and sadly, I don't really see it ending anytime soon. I really enjoyed Ghost of Tsushima when it came out back in 2020, I believe it was. You know, the great swordplay and beautiful graphics made it a real standout for that year. So I was pretty psyched when they announced the sequel, Ghost of Yotai. But a funny thing happened before that game could come out. A thing called Assassin's Creed Shadows. Now, if you listen to the episode on that game from earlier this year, you'll remember how much I loved it. It took the series that I've always loved and placed it in the setting that fans have been asking for years, 16th century Japan, specifically Kyoto, the Kyoto area. So it's one of my favorite games of the year. And by the time that Yotai came out about 6 months later, it really had me wondering, do I really need to jump into another open world game with a similar setting, familiar gameplay, and a story that is bizarrely close to the one in Assassin's Creed? Thankfully, I think the answer is yes, because, you know, while Ghost of Yotai does share a lot of similarities to Shadows, it does enough different and unique things that I think it's well worth another trip to Japan. So the story follows a young woman who goes on a blood-soaked quest for vengeance against a group of masked villains who murdered her family and left her for dead years ago. And if you're asking yourself, wait, which game is he talking about, Yotai or Shadows? The answer is yes. It's both of them. The setup for the two games is nearly identical, which is really, really weird. But the way that they go about telling that story through the rest of the game is fairly different. I would say that Yotai takes much more of a minimalist approach to its open world gameplay compared to Shadows. While it's still, you know, it's an open world game and it doesn't feel like you're bombarded with a million icons on the screen with endless objectives and collectibles. There's definitely side stuff to do and keep you busy, but it's much more of a focused experience. And the main story is much tighter too. In Shadows, I think my list of targets must have gotten to be like 50 people by the time I finished it. In Yotai, it's like, you know, hey, kill these six guys. You know, it's kind of refreshing to see them really kind of streamline things. Anyway, enough about Assassin's Creed Shadows. Enough about the comparisons. I promise, let's just talk about this game. So like I said, you play as Atsu, a young woman on a quest for vengeance, and she's played by Erika Ishii, who really does a bang-up job in this role. I think her character is more interesting than Jin was in the first game. Not that Jin was boring or annoying or anything. I just found her, and maybe it's the performance, I found her a bit more compelling. And I think that goes a long way as far as keeping me engaged with this story. The overall plot isn't particularly interesting. You know, it's kind of basic, but Atsu, and in particular her relationships with some of the other characters that she comes across during the story, are quite good. Gameplay-wise, you know, I don't know that the game does anything radically different from Tsushima. It's got the same kind of, you know, solid swordplay that still feels really good, and they do give you some different stuff to play with, like smoke bombs and the ability to light your sword on fire and other types of weapons. You know, you can do two swords, one giant sword. There's like a spear thing. So there's some variety, but it still feels very familiar. And that's not a bad thing necessarily, as, you know, like I said, it's quite good. It's just, you know, it feels a little bit like more of that thing you like. You'll also take on, you know, there's bounty missions, there's bamboo slicing mini games, there's, you know, you can rescue cute little wolf puppies in between your hunt for the main bad guys who killed your family. And like the last game, the world you're exploring in, this is northern Japan, is super gorgeous. I mean, that was maybe the most memorable thing for me about Ghost of Tsushima. It was just how gorgeous that game was. And Yotai is a stunner too. You know, the wind blowing through the trees and the leaves on the ground and the colorful flowers as you race your horse through the meadows. It's just, it's all very, very pretty. I am only about, you know, 25 to 30 hours into the game, which feels like halfway, maybe a little bit more. I'm having a very good time. Even though it's treading on familiar ground, it still scratches that itch for open world games that I really, really like. I think that if you're intimidated, did I say that right? By the, you know, like the big 100 plus hours that you could drop into Assassin's Creed Shadows, this is a nice, leaner alternative, I think. And even if you played Assassin's Creed like I did, I think the performance of Ishii and the beautiful world that they've created here is good enough for sure to also play this one. So the holidays are almost here. A lot of kids, most kids, are probably about to go on their winter break. Some of you are going to have some time off from work, and chances are you're going to be looking for things to fill the day when everybody's sitting around at home. And if you're looking for something fun to play with the family, Netflix, oddly enough, has some really cool party games that are included with your subscription, and they're ones where you use your phone as a controller. So all you need is your TV, and, you know, if everybody's got a phone or an iPad or whatever, they can use that. There is a Lego party game. There is Pictionary, which has you obviously drawing. Everybody knows Pictionary. There's a Tetris Time Warp, which I haven't played yet. But the two that were my family's favorites were Boggle Party, which, you know, if you've played Boggle also, you know, you'll know how this works. Has everybody racing to find the most words out of a random mix of letters. And then there's Party Crashers. And in Party Crashers, every player is shown a general topic. And then all but one of them are shown the secret word. And the deal is that everyone has to give a hint to what the secret word is, even the person who doesn't know it, didn't see what the secret word is. So the person who doesn't know the word is trying to hide the fact that they don't know it. So they're maybe trying to come up with a kind of a vague word that could describe a lot of things. And then at the end, everybody has to vote for who they think the party crasher is. You know, and if they guess correctly, you get points. If you're the party crasher and nobody guesses you, you know, you get points for that and stuff like that. It's a fun little game. And they're also going to be adding more games, they've said, including a Knives Out game. So that's really interesting. So yeah, if you're looking for some fun family game time, go check out the games section on Netflix. And a little bit of housekeeping before we go today. The show will be off next week for a little holiday break. So if you are celebrating Hanukkah, Christmas, or anything else, I hope you have a very wonderful and peaceful holiday. The show will return for two back-to-back episodes on Thursday, January 1st, and Friday, January 2nd, for the Midlife SideQuest Game of the Year special. I'm going to be counting down my top 10 games of 2025, as well as celebrating celebrating some of the other great things that happened throughout the year. Yes, there were some good things that happened. Even when the world is a hot mess, we need to remember to celebrate the things that we love and that make us happy. It's those moments of joy that keep us going through the tough times after all. So don't miss out on those two special episodes in 2 weeks. Thank you so much for listening to Midlife Side Quest. I appreciate you making time in your day to hang out with me. You can catch new episodes of the show every Thursday morning wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can support the show by subscribing and leaving a review. Until next time, have a great week and happy holidays.